Welcome to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. My guest today is Todd Miller. He's working on a book called Border Patrol Nation, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Homeland Security. This book's going to be available from City Lights Books next spring. Todd Miller has been researching and working on immigration issues for the past 15 years. He's worked for such organizations as Borderlinks, Witness for Peace, and NACLA. NACLA stands for the North American Congress on Latin America, and Todd Miller contributes to a blog there called Border Wars as well. His work has appeared in Tom Dispatch, Mother Jones, The Nation, Counterpunch, Upside Down World, The Providence Journal, The Independent, Al Jazeera, Narco News, NACLA Report on the Americas, and Common Dreams, among other places. Todd Miller will be speaking on Saturday, October 5th at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church. There's a benefit taking place there for WAMOP, which provides acupuncture services to people in Guatemala. More information on that event is available at guamap.net. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been working a lot on border issues for the past 15 years as a human rights worker and as a journalist, and your articles recently have been getting a lot of traction. Why do you think that is?
Good question. One of the reasons why I would, if I'm to guess, is that I have been looking at border issues through the lens of a kind of industrial complex, like a variation of the military-industrial complex, but in the border, in the quote-unquote border security sense. For example, some of my articles have dealt with going to border security expos, and what that means is they're gigantic malls of I would even characterize them as gigantic malls of the surveillance state. And you go there and you see some of the biggest companies, including like your military contractors that would be in Iraq, Afghanistan, or other places, you know, supplying the U.S. military with its hardware, its artillery, and you see them trying to peddle their goods tailored towards the U.S. towards the U.S. Mexico border or any international boundary in the world for that matter, and trying to sell it to Department of Homeland Security, and so you have this effort of companies big and small trying to cash in on increased resources. And when I say increased resources, I mean significantly bolstered budgets are constantly growing for border security and immigration enforcement, specifically in the post 9/11 era, but since the mid 1990s, it's a growth area. There's ever increasing resources. There's been market reports that show it as a 5% growth industry. This year in 2013, is a global market. Border security is estimated to be a $20 billion market. I'm seeing it as an investment, and that's what I see. I see when I go to like the Border Security Expo, I see people that are very enthusiastic. I had one salesperson tell me, "We are bringing the battlefield to the border." And his implication was that as wars were winding down in other places, that his company and other companies needed to find other places to sell their goods.
So you were at the annual trade show in March in Phoenix for border security.
Yes, it was in Phoenix. It's at the Convention Center. It was the 7th annual such expo. And I would encourage anybody listening to try to go and see this firsthand because it's amazing. You get in there and it's almost like Disney World for the surveillance state. You walk into the Convention Center and things will be hanging from the ceilings like aerostats. Aerostats are small surveillance blimps with cameras hung from them. There's mini drones, and you can go talk to a salesperson who's trying to hawk these mini drones, and they look like frisbees. And one guy asked, you know, "Hey, what are you using that frisbee-like drone for?" And he said, "Well, it's just to see what's on the other side of the hill." You know, so you get all kinds of like really frank and interesting answers from people. And I say Disney-esque because I went to like one like the different companies will set up, you know, they'll put up their surveillance towers and you get to see them firsthand, and they'll put barbed wire around them, and they'll put like what they consider to be desert shrubbery, plastic desert shrubbery. So they're trying to make this militarized border zone as a part of their selling of these products. So it's really interesting and informative and educational. And on top of that, it's not only the companies, but it's actual Department of Homeland Security comes there, and some of their big shots even will come and do you know, talk about, oh, what are, you know, what we're looking for on the borders, how we're trying to, like, in Arizona, there's been this talk and concentration on doing a virtual wall, and essentially not the real physical wall that's on the U.S.-Mexico border here in Arizona, but more of a surveillance wall in which, you know, surveillance, you know, different surveillance towers are out placed in the desert away from the border, where they'll be able to, and they're connected with motion sensors, and they're also connected with Predator-B drones, which are flying overhead, as well as other aircraft used increasingly by the U.S. Border Patrol and other agencies that are patrolling the border.
Well, what do you say to people in the community, the government, business, who really feel like we need to have some kind of border security?
There's right now there is a very good debate around that, especially in June. The U.S. Senate passed a bill looking at the immigration reform bill, which has $46 billion that is allotted towards this idea of border security. And that's on top of budgets that are already constantly growing. They've grown year after year after year after year. In fact, if you look at the budgets for Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and ICE, in 2012 it was $18 billion, and that budget was more than all other law enforcement agencies, federal law enforcement agencies combined, and that includes the FBI, the DEA. So it's obvious the federal government has put a priority on border and immigration enforcement. So I would ask, first of all, why would we need so many of these resources put towards this? And in my book, one of the things I look at is how other basic services, such as education, such as even paving our roads with potholes, such as healthcare, such as all kinds of basic services, public transportation, are being cut significantly. Like I even go to Detroit as part of the book, and everyone knows that Detroit just declared bankruptcy, and its basic services have been getting cut for years and years, yet they have had increased Homeland Security and increased Border Patrol because they are on the border, right? So they border with Windsor, Ontario. And so you see significant increases in this Homeland Security while basic services for people in need are being cut. So the idea of what is security, it becomes a significant question. And that's one that I believe that everyone in the United States should be asking that question. What is real security? When people say we need border security, what does that mean? What are we safeguarding? If people are already falling through the cracks left and right in our country, are they not lacking in critical needs and you could say security? So that would be the question I would ask.
You're listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. My guest today is Todd Miller. His forthcoming book, going to be due out in the spring, is called Border Patrol Nation, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Homeland Security. The issue of security is an important question in your book. What are some of the things that you come up with when you ask that?
Yeah, that's a good question. The book itself is really, I'm really delving into things that Tucsonans are very well versed in, the idea of what, you know, the significant changes that we've seen here in southern Arizona, even over the last 15 years. If you go down to Nogales, it looks so much almost deformed. It looks completely different than it did 20 years ago, before Operation Safeguard, that built the wall, that brought in all the Border Patrol agents, that brought in all the brought in all the technology, all the cameras, all the things that you see if you go to Nogales these days. And so basically when the book was looking at this significant increase of what is considered to be security and looking at first on the southwestern border, but look, trying to ask questions that aren't normally asked, like one chapter I look at children, like programs for youth, like the Border Patrol Explorers programs, which basically are for 14 to 21 year old kids who are then work with the Border Patrol, and they learn all the different, you know, the different, they learn the mission of the Border Patrol and they actually practice it. So it's almost, in a way, it's almost like, you know, developing kids to be potential, you know, future Border Patrol agents, or at least embody the sort of worldview of the Border Patrol agency, this idea that we need hardened, enforced borders that are between, that really demarcate a line between us and them, between legal and illegal, in quotes, between criminal and innocent, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very, very stark lines of so in a way, so looking at that sort of border security, it's always hardened, the more hardened and more militarized the border becomes, the more otherized the person, the peoples that are excluded from crossing that border become. And so it looks at that sort of the not so obvious manifestations of this kind of pump up of border security. How does it affect children? How does it how the tech, the sort of like industrial complex stuff, but also tries to look at it geographically. Where is it becoming bolstered? It's, as I discussed, in Detroit. Nobody talks about the northern border, but yes, the northern border has been significantly ramped up. I go to the Puerto Rico and the Caribbean, which is considered the quote-unquote third border, and lo and behold, they're asking for more resources there. There's a drone flying over the Mona Strait, which is between Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic. I go to the Dominican Republic, too, and they have started their own border patrol, which at the encouragement of the U.S. government in 2006. And so what I found out there was that they're one of many countries who are forming their own border patrol at the encouragement of the United States as a part of a global strategy to harden borders across the globe. So I went and interviewed, it's in the Dominican borders between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. So I spent much time there, and I interviewed the general who's in charge of the Border Patrol unit. And they talked about getting trainings from the U.S. Border Patrol and getting actually funds to start this program. And basically what I'm saying is looking at the model that you see in the southwest border and see how it's expanding geographically, not only throughout the United States, but abroad. It's being exported abroad, and it's not only sticking to the actual borders, the international boundaries around the country. It is being internalized as well. So the interior enforcement, the increased ranks of immigration and customs enforcement, and the different laws like SB 1070 that we see in Arizona and different states that have adopted the law. And I spend time in South Carolina, and South Carolina has actually formed its own, the state of South Carolina actually has formed its own quote-unquote border patrol. So a state has its own immigration enforcement. They call it the Immigration Enforcement Unit, but it's like a border patrol that was formed by the state based on their kind of SB 1070 law that they have there. So that's this security, like this. It's actually an examination of a security state, both a country on lockdown, so to speak, and also how it's being internalized and exported.
Todd Miller, remind us again what some of the provisions that are still a part of SB 1070 are.
The main provision of SB 1070 is the part of it where police officers are quote unquote obligated if they have quote unquote, I believe, reasonable suspicion that a person does not have the proper papers to be in the United States, that they are obligated to ask that person to produce those papers, and so that's there were other provisions that were struck from SB 1070 by the Supreme Court, but that's the main one and a significant one at that, because that's the part of it that allows police to actually question people, to actually play the role as a de facto Border Patrol agent, so to speak.
And why is that a problem?
I mean, you could even talk to the Tucson police chief, and he would tell you that it's a problem because he would say, I would probably say different things, but he would say there's inadequate training for police officers to be enforcing immigration law. He would talk about how if police, who are public safety officers, who are supposed to be looking out for people's public safety, are, you know, asking people about their papers, then there's going to be a breach of trust with communities in Tucson, especially undocumented communities, and it would cause people to not want to approach the police if they had any sort of problems. And there are incidents where people have called the police when they felt they've been endangered, and then the police ask them for their papers, and then they are arrested when they were the victim of some sort of crime. That's the argument I've heard from Villasenor, who's the police chief here in Tucson, and that's quite a common argument used by this is the police argument. This isn't even my argument.
You're listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. My guest today is Todd Miller, author of a forthcoming book called Border Patrol Nation: Dispatches from the Front Lines of Homeland Security. That book's going to be out in the spring. It's going to be available through City Lights Book. And Todd Miller will be speaking on Saturday, October 5th at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church as part of a benefit for GUAMAP, G-U-A-M-A-P, which provides acupuncture services in Guatemala. More information on that event is available at GUAMAP.com. .net. With the increase of funding for security, for fencing, for more personnel, more equipment, how has that affected immigration?
You hear a lot of, especially from the Homeland Security people, you hear that, you know, that immigration's at a low apprehension rates by the Border Patrol are at I believe it's a 40-year low. And the first thing that people from the Department of Homeland Security will say is, well, it's because we've ramped up our, you know, we have our borders are more secure than ever, that we have, you know, all this stuff on the borders, and now we're really stopping people from coming to the United States. And that's a commonly used argument, though there's a lot, at least in my opinion, there's a lot of holes in that argument. Mainly, if you look at Mexico, migration from Mexico to the United States from the mid-1990s in the post-North American Free Trade Agreement era up until about 2005, you're seeing historic levels of immigration coming from Mexico. And I lived in Oaxaca, Mexico for 4 years during that time, and I would go to, like, commonly to communities where lots of people were migrating from, and they would be empty. You know, they call them, what do they call them? Pueblos fantasmas, so like ghost communities where, or just, you know, like older people and maybe, yeah, older people or young or kids would be there. But there are different variations of that throughout the entirety of Mexico. And so when you hear people talking about, you know, the border, like this idea of border security as being a solution, it really, what its effects have been, a lot of people in Arizona know this, is that people are the so-called funnel effect, where the more enforcement you put in certain places, like in the urban centers, like Nogales, Douglas, people will not cross there, and that's true. Yeah, where there's a wall, where there's lots of agents, people will not cross there. They will be then will funnel around those areas into areas that are much more dangerous to cross, such as the desert in Arizona, such as the desert in the summer when it is so hot and it's impossible to bring enough water. And now you're seeing people, it used to be that people would talk about 3-day journeys, and now you're hearing even more longer journeys, like 5 days, 6 days, sometimes 10, 15 days. And journeys, I just talked to a woman who from Oaxaca, Mexico, who crossed, and I believe that she had actually died and was brought back to life by, she talked about having electrical shocks on her body, and she had been walking for days without water. She was describing her journey as the mountains started talking to her, and she started hearing like the dust say words, and then they arrived to the road, and they said, a bunch of people in the group said, we have to call Border Patrol or we have to turn ourselves in. And she described, like, people in their group, their noses spontaneously exploding with blood. And that sort of, like, humanitarian crisis is going on in our desert just south of Tucson constantly. And so that's a sort of thing that happens with increased security mechanisms that people are just – circumventing them. And the other thing is that there might be you're looking at an economy in the United States which was producing less jobs. So the economic recession has, you know, if there's no jobs, then obviously people have no motive to come. But one thing that we've always looked at is the whole, if you're going to holistically look at how, you know, the issues of immigration, first of all, immigration has been going on for forever. Everyone's always, you know, anyone in this country, in the United States, almost everyone except for Native Americans have immigrated here to this country. But you also have to look at reasons why people are migrating from their home, their places of, like, if a person migrates from Mexico, it's an intimate decision that people probably don't want to. It's not like, oh, we're just going to go. You're leaving your community, you're leaving the language you speak, you're leaving your loved ones often. And it's a very hard and difficult decision, and it's done because oftentimes ends can't be met. And oftentimes ends can't be met due to structural issues such as economic structuring, such as the North America, the sorts of things you see with NAFTA and the impacts of NAFTA in Mexico, where small farmers can't compete against big U.S. agribusiness or big grain movers like Cargill or Archer Daniel Midland or you know, the kind of unequal competition and you've seen you and that kind of force it like Archer Daniel Midland would, you know, big grain movers would actually underprice small farmers below the cost of production. So if a farmer can't produce is being undercut by their competition at below the cost of production, they're going to go bankrupt. And there are millions of farmers in Mexico have gone bankrupt. So it seems weird. It always seems weird to me that when you're talking about immigration, the first thing is, oh, we have to get our border secured. And the thing that's never, ever, ever even talked about or remote, you know, only a few people on the fringes talk about, like, the ideas that economic situations and even economic situations promoted by the United States could be the reasons behind why people would migrate.
I've heard Representative Gutierrez say that immigration reform for this year is dead. Does that mean the border security that went along with it is also dead?
That remains to be. That's a good question. I've heard that as well. I've heard that from a bunch of, you know, different analysts saying that the immigration bill this year is dead. But what does dead mean? Right now, still on the table is a Senate bill, which could be, even if it's dead for this year, it could be brought up in January. I've heard also that you know, the House might be interested in passing piecemeal versions of the Senate bill, and if they were, as a knee jerk response, and as we've seen with immigration reform, is, oh, we've got to secure the borders first. One piecemeal package could be a sort of border security package, much like what we've seen in the Senate bill, and the Senate bill is as it's calling for, what, 19,000 more Border Patrol agents, bringing ranks to 40,000. It's calling for billions of dollars and more technologies. It's calling for more drones to fly over. Say one thing, the Border Patrol operates in a 100-mile zone, so the sort of like patrolling can be done in a 100-mile zone, and anyone who knows that Tucson's in that 100-mile zone, so literally drones, these drones could be flying over Tucson and doing surveillance missions over Tucson within the Border Patrol jurisdiction of what they can patrol. So all that stuff is in the Senate bill, and some sort of piecemeal package could feasibly happen. But it's not looking like anything's going to happen this year.
What do you say to the response where people often say, well, if they're not doing anything wrong, they shouldn't have anything to worry about with surveillance?
Oh, people say that all the time. I have nothing to hide. So it's interesting because Glenn Greenwald, the journalist from The Guardian who broke Edward Snowden, the NSA whistleblower, broke all the documents with Greenwald. And every time he gets that I have nothing to hide comment, he responds, and I follow his Twitter feed, so I see this on Twitter. He says, okay, send me your email and your password, and let me look through your email and your password. And I think that just about, I mean, who wants anyone who's going to get, you have a password because you don't want people just looking through your email and you know, I think that just about says it all.
You're listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. My guest today has been author, journalist Todd Miller. He's working on a book called Border Patrol Nation, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Homeland Security, which will be available this spring from City Lights Books. He's going to be speaking on Saturday, October 5th at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in a benefit for acupuncture training in Guatemala. More information about that event is available at guamap.net. Todd Miller, how can people find out more about your work?
Well, I blog for NACLA. So if you go to NACLA, NACLA.org, and you look for the blog Border Wars, that's the blog that I do write for regularly. I actually have a website, so I might as well. It's new, so it's a work in progress, but it's Todd W. Miller, TODDWMILLER.wordpress.com. And that has a compilation of all my work up to this point, and I'll be updating it as when I have new pieces, or even this radio interview maybe will go on my website. And those are the two best places to find me right now.
Final remarks?
Well, most people in Tucson are aware of how significant the increase of Homeland Security has been. But it's often remarkable for me when I travel outside of Tucson that how little is known about what's going on in the borderlands. And that is one of the reasons I think that it can expand so easily, into the northern border, into the interior of the country, out in the Caribbean, and externally as well. I would just encourage people to speak about what they see here in Tucson and the Arizona borderlands. And it is a very important phenomenon that's happening, and it says a lot about what's happening in our country, and it's a really important thing to talk about.
My guest today has been Todd Miller. Thank you for listening to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson.